Hold on one sec, Dan, so we can get it on the recording.
I just turned it on. I just turned it on.
Just turned on. Okay, so go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, this question might have been answered already, but why would, now that we can't do Korban Pesach, why would that be replaced by matzah, which is a completely different entity as opposed to meat, the type of meat that was the Pesach?
Right. That, you see, that would be a zecher. There would be two problems with that. Well, first, let's go to the why we do use the matzah. So the Rambam really answers that at the very with the last three words of Halacha Tes, she'achilasan hi ha-mitzvah. In other words, they share a common generic category, a genus, as it were, which is to say, mitzvos alayla. So the Korban Pesach, not as Korban Pesach. We eat the Korban Pesach as the most excellent form and expression of mitzvah talayla. So in the absence of the ideal mitzvah talayla, we go to the junior mitzvah talayla, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why we have the matzah. Now, if we were to if we were to do a meat, that wouldn't be a achilas, just any old meat. That wouldn't be an object of mitzvah at all, and therefore that would shift from being a less beautiful expression of eating mitzvahs alayla to being a zecher only. It would shift into like being like the two pieces of meat on the Pesach plate, which are not they're not substitutes for Korban Pesach. They simply are reminders of Korban Pesach. So if we could possibly avoid losing the mitzvah altogether, albeit with a less ideal expression of it, we do that. Now, if for whatever reason, let's say a world existed in which there was no matzah, you know, not just for one particular person or one particular day, but let's say matzah for whatever reason ceased to exist, then probably something like that would occur. You'd have to have a zecher for the afikoman, but we don't have to have a zecher. We can do we can do the actual mitzvah with a less ideal object.
So you're saying the mitzvah sachilas matzah is eating matzah.
That's right.
And then the mitzvah of eating Korban Pesach is fulfilled, or I don't know what is fulfilled through the eating the afikoman.
No. One is already in both cases. One has fulfilled the mitzvah before the meal began in halacha zayin. Like we do today, exactly as we do today. Namely, before the meal, we have we say our hamotzi lechem haaretz and our alach les matzah and eat our matzah and we eat our maror and then we eat them together zecher lemikdash and then we have our meal. So when the mikdash is around, you would have another one. That is, you would have another two. You would have alach les zevach, which is for the chagiga, and you would on. You would have the bracha on Achilas Pesach for the Achilas Pesach. All four of those eatings would be done before the meal. So the Achilas Shel Mitzvah has already been done for Korban Pesach and for matzah. But there's an enhancement of the mitzvah to eat more. You know, even though you've done your kezias to eat some more, is still a mitzvah. It's an enhancement of the mitzvah. So ideally, one accomplishes afikoman through an additional eating of a dessert of korban meat. In the absence of korban meat, one makes one's dessert on the secondary object of mitzvah of the night, which is to say, or I should say of this framework, which is to say matzah.
You said four things, so it's matzah. So,
it's actually five. In the old days, when the mikdash was around, it would have been five. It would have been matzah, maror, four. Matzah, maror, and chagiga, and korban pesach. So four.
And then we just do the korech is because that was one position. That was Hillel.
We do it because the best way in the old days when there was a Mikdash, there were two different ways you could do it. You could either eat the matzah and maror together, right? And then you would say the bracha of alechiles matzah maror, or alechiles matzah marorim, and or you could eat them separately. And then you would say a bracha for achilas matzah and for achilas maror separately. You could do either way. But nowadays, you can only do it separately because the maror is not daraisa anymore. So you can't do them together. So therefore, if you eat them together, it's obvious that it's not for the sake of the mitzvah. It's for something else. And that something else is to remember the way it used to be. Okay. Rambam, the Rambam doesn't say Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel. He just says Zecher LeMikdash. Okay, so moving on to but now we go to the issue we were left off with yesterday, which is to say, why should we have an evening? Why should we bother having a dessert on Korban Pesach, on some object of mitzvah altogether? Why are we doing that? And we don't need anything after. Why do we do that?
Because really the essence of the meal is Korban Pesach.
Or the object of mitzvah. And the Korban Pesach is the paradigmatic object of mitzvah in that framework.
Yeah.
Okay, so what exactly do we accomplish? I'm agreeing with you, but let's just work it through. So what would it be? So what have I accomplished by eating at the end that I wouldn't have had if I just ate it before?
Because you really used to be satiated by the object of mitzvah, not by other stuff.
Why should I be? I agree with you again. Why should I be? What really does it say? What really am I trying to? What point am I trying to demonstrate or make obvious? Or what point am I making?
It seems like that's really the completion of the freedom. Is
and what would it look like if I just ate the meal and didn't do it?
That you replaced the essence of the so if we're going to say that the object of mitzvah is the food and we're not being satisfied by the food that is the object of mitzvah, then we're not really completely understanding what the cheres is, or we're
that's
understanding
right.
it, but we're not.
That's right. Think of how a seder goes. Can we eat yet?
Right.
Can we eat yet? So what does that mean? So what that means is, exactly as you're saying, Mendel, that the message of Cheirus, and as we're going to hopefully talk about tonight, more importantly, the message of Yehudo has not been inspiring. So
has not been inspiring?
That's right.
What do you mean, at the Seder?
That's right. Because what does it mean? Can we eat yet? This is boring. This is meaningless.
Yeah.
Let's do something fun. Why are we doing what's unfun and meaningless when we can do something which is fun?
Bring on the grub.
What?
Well, that's what my kids ask every single day when they're in school.
I totally get that. The Seder, it's difficult. And I'm not saying it's easy with a kid, but and the mere fact that one eats a dessert of matzah or korban meat or matzah doesn't in and of itself solve the problem, but it points to the way, namely that one recognizes sometimes an important part of the problem is recognizing that there is a lacking in oneself. That there's a lacking, it's me, my knowledge. I did not prepare sufficiently to make it exciting. I'm not at the level of my development to be able to appreciate the life of mind enough to not to be feeling impatience to want to eat. That, fine, fine. Next year, I'll have a little bit of a better Seder. The year after that, I'll have a little bit of a better Seder. So, but it creates at least the discussion point. Namely, really, this meal, the meal is not the good. The meal is not what this is about. Unlike Thanksgiving, unlike 4th of July, unlike Lahav Dil Christmas, the meal is not the essence. The eating, the message, the discussion, the thought, the transformation that occurs through the eating of the object of mitzvah, that's the essence. And therefore, to inoculate ourselves, to give a name to and to recognize and to inoculate ourselves from the disposition to want to escape into the oasis of the meal and realize, no, the meal itself should be an ancillary and an instrument and a handmaiden to the discussion. The eating, the making, the concluding of one's meal with the dessert of the object of mitzvah is another way to drive that lesson home. That was really what it was all about. That's the most important part. That's the memory I want to be lasting on my mouth as I move into the hollow. I don't want the savor of the spicy chicken to be on my mouth. I don't want the savor of cake to be on my mouth. I don't want the savor of a candy or a chocolate to be on my mouth. I want the thought-provoking taste experience of the mitzvah to be the final and lasting impression of the meal, leading me into the final challah.
I never really understood the when do we eat thing, because there's so much mitzvah eating that I'm not even hungry when we get to the meal. You know?
Yeah.
You eat karpas, matzah, maror, you know?
Yep.
Typically
that happens between karpas and matzah and maror.
You mean when they haven't had the matzah and maror yet?
Yes, and oftentimes matzah and maror is the price one is willing to pay to have the meal at least to get into the meal already.
Right.
What do you mean the price you pay? What do you mean?
In other words, it's not that. In other words, it's from a purely caloric perspective, from a purely being filled up perspective. I mean, you know, it's not like you're starving to death when you come into the meal. On the contrary, you've had plenty to eat.
Yeah.
But from the psychological perspective of getting food entertainment, one is ravenous.
Right.
So
having some food entertainment, some distracting food entertainment, when it's ravenous, when the whole night has been going stretching and working and eating things and doing things one doesn't really want to do and eating things one doesn't really want to eat. So one wants, you know, to settle down. It's a comfort food experience. From the perspective of comfort food, the need is acute. From the perspective of starvation, there's no starvation whatsoever. But from the perspective of comfort food, the need for comfort from the food is at its height.
That's an odd idea in and of itself, comfort food, how that works. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's off topic, but it is very interesting that some foods are comforting while others are not.
Mm-hmm.
What's it called? I think a lot of the reason, in particular, I may not feel hungry by the end of Shulchan Aruch is, number one, I eat a lot during Shulchan Aruch itself, but also motzi, matzah, and korech, there's a lot of matzah that's being consumed when in fact you need, the minimum is a lot less, right?
That's also true. People eat a lot more than really is necessary. That's also true.
The amount of matzah that you need to eat, I guess it depends partially on the thickness of the matzah itself, but also on the
size. That's true.
Generally speaking, for a random matzah, what's the
how much of the matzah do you need?
Yeah,
I think it's
credit card size, or two pieces that are credit card size, or
well, it depends. I mean, there's very good reason to believe that a credit card size would be enough. But according to the Shulchan Aruch, that would not be enough.
So do you mean two credit card size for like Korach or Motzi Matzah, or one credit card size?
One credit card size for the one, and one credit card size for the other.
Uh-huh. Okay.
There's very good reason to think that that's correct. There were very good people who did that. However,
and that's even for the Ashkenazi matzahs.
Yes. But I'm not saying to do it. Listen, you gotta know yourself. You know, depending on, so that's a valid position, and I certainly wouldn't put down anybody who did that. On the other hand,
whose position is that?
That's Reb Chaim Volozhin. And many others. And many
the credit card?
Yeah, and many others. Many others in Israel today hold that today too. But but it's not the Shulchan Aruch, and it's certainly the right thing to follow the Shulchan Aruch. And that would be, I think, the minimum of for getting the, what is that, a third of a matzah or half a machine matzah, or so?
Well, it depends on what you take for Motzi Matzah. Is the two kazayas or one kazayas?
Let's say the one kazayas.
Of a shmura?
According to Rabbi Willig, I think that'd be a third of a matzah, right?
A little less, even a fifth.
I don't remember.
A fifth being a smaller amount, certainly a third is certainly good.
What?
Certainly a third is certainly good.
A third of a matzah would certainly be good, and there's a very reasonable estimate that a fifth of a machine matzah would be enough, too.
No. Fifth of a
Hand matzah.
Right, and shmur, and then I guess...
Easier to visualize a machine matzah. So what would it be in a machine matzah?
He doesn't buy gram. He doesn't do it by...
Yeah, I remember...
You can Google it. Google.
I remember. I'll try to remember. I calculated it at one time. I have it written down in one of my masters. On one of my haggadahs. So I'll try to find that for you. But it's not that much. It's not that much. Okay. So all right. So moving on. So anyway, Mendel. So yes. Yeah, so that's right. So maybe people eating a lot more than they really have to. That's another point. So was there another point you wanted to make, Mendel?
No, I really was trying to get to, if I can minimize the amount that I'm eating for Motzi Matzah and for Korech, and then
right.
If I eat whatever, a couple meatballs during Shulchan Aruch, then it's possible that I could still be hungry and nothing else. I could still be maybe not feeling hunger, but certainly not overstuffing by eating a kazayas for Afikom.
Okay. All right, listen, you have to calculate in yourself.
Yeah.
So if
you're saying it can't be a kilogasa,
right? Okay. I didn't say that, but Mendel was thinking that, and it's true. It shouldn't be.
Certainly at least not getting to the point of it possibly being an achilas gasa.
Right.
Well, then then you're getting to a point that's not an achila.
Right. It's not eating at all. So keep that in mind. I mean, I'll at a different time I'll review all that stuff and try to get a sense of how to picture that in all different matzahs. Okay,
so
it's a little bit hard because
they have like a sheet of paper and then you kind of measure the size of the matzah and even the romaine lettuce.
Right. Those are extremely large. Those are an extremely large.
Those are the machmer sheetas.
That's the most extremely strict. Theories of what constitutes a kazayas, an olive's worth, and it's really not necessary to go with that level. That's that measure of size. And as Menzel's pointing out, there's actually a negative side to it, namely that you might very well not even you might eat so much that you're not eating. You're not getting defined as eating. So. Your chumrah will become a kula, not even a kula. It'll become an obstacle. So
I used to follow those sheets pretty strictly, and I was totally stuffed, from all of the matzah and maror that I when I got to Shulchan Aruch.
Right. Well, there's not such a problem of being stuffed for Shulchan Aruch. So if you just have a little bit to eat at Shulchan Aruch, there's nothing wrong with that. But the real problem is not being able to do your afikoman. That's a problem. Okay.
Yeah.
So There's no iser to eat very lightly at the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, a little bit. A little bit of soup, a little bit of meatball. That's a very big key. You don't want to be feeling bad and overstuffed and really paying the price in the morning. So the place to really go easy is on Shulchan Aruch. Just have a little bit, a little taste of this, a little taste of that. Okay. So
hard to do that when your wife is bringing out the best.
I know it is. Okay. So we leave off with Yud. So v'achar kach notel yadav. Afterwards, he washes his hands. As Rav Avram, the son of the Rambam, points out, that's a very nice thing to do under all circumstances. Always wash your hands before Birkas HaMazon. Really, in the same sort of manner as the one washes one's hand before tefillah, as a preparation for the awesome message, the significant and awesome message of the Birkas HaMazon. Also, of course, also out of the fear of the danger of blinding salt, but additionally, and perhaps even more importantly, under many circumstances, to prepare oneself for Birkas HaMazon.
How is that a preparation?
In the same sense as washing your hands for tefillah, in the sense that one is reminding oneself and guiding oneself to realize that tefillah requires preparation, separation from one's normal mentality, refocus on something else, and a tahara of mind from one's material concerns, which is very, very important precondition for kavana on Hashem's wisdom, rather than on one's everyday material affairs. It comes from the Kohana, who would have to keep tahara for the kudshim and the taharas, so that because that's part and parcel of the entire mentality of the mikdash. That the mikdash has to be separated from everyday life for the educational message of recognition that the approach to Hashem requires a elevation, a redirection of one's focus and energy from the pursuits which are the essence of one's energy and interest outside the Mikdash. Okay. Mvarech Birkas HaMazon al Kol Shlishi. He says the Birkas HaMazon on the third cup, thereby distinguishing the third cup as a bracha of mitzvah, which is an answer, being a toast of a proper toasting in the framework of celebration of our freedom and moving towards and the, even more importantly, the being privileged to be educated in the Chochmas Hashem, which points to His oneness. Vishusay and drinks it. V'achar kach mozeg kosh rivi'i. Afterwards, he pours himself a fourth cup. The gomira lavas a halal, and he finishes the halal. So the halal is divided up into two parts. The first part is preparatory to Rabban Gamliel, is preparatory to the mentality necessary to be cognizing the message of freedom in the context and redemption in the context of the mitzvahs. When it organizes and summarizes and consolidates in the soul all that one has learned from the Haggadah, the Kriyas HaHaggadah, and one is inspired from that. One recognizes the tremendous good that Hashem brought about through the instrument, through the vehicle of the miracles of the Exodus. And when responds with a tremendous hakar satov, with a tremendous sense of hakar satov to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, to privilege us to be citizens of such an to be Mamlechas Kohanim Goy Kadesh, to be the citizens of the nation which has brought wisdom to all of humanity, and continues to do so. So one has a tremendous recognition of Hakar Sato for that, and that is the first Hallel. And one has the Maase Mitzvah, a sense of redemption through Maase Mitzvah, and then one is ready to continue the going deeper into the objectives of the Seder, and recognize the more universal themes that that our freedom is an opportunity for. The second part of the Hallel goes into more universal themes. Okay. Makom, 1 second. Okay. Ve'omer ala birkas hashir. V'hi ya'aluch Hashem elokecha elokeinu kol ma'asecha. And ve'einu toim achar kach klo. Doesn't taste anything after that. In other words, he's had the kos of wine, but he does not have any entertainment, anything else eating, drinking. Kol alai lechutz min amayim, anything all night, except for water. V'yesh lo limzog kos chamish, and he is permitted to pour a fifth cup. V'lomar alav halel gadol, and to say upon it halel gadol. V'hu mehodu l'Hashem kitov ad naharos bavo. Until from Hodu L'Hashem Kitov till Naharis Bavo. The Kosa Eino Chova, and this cup is not obligatory. Kmo Arba Kosas, like the four cups. Now, in this particular case, go ahead.
Isn't that a Balposa? And what heck is it? It's Dalakos. What is this guy shipping around in another coast here? and if that paragraph tilim is critical, put
right.
It in Hallel.
Right.
If it's not,
so what do you? So what? Why? How are you allowed to do it?
Right.
So,
and that's what we Ashkenazim do. We do place it in the.
I don't do it. I don't do it. Based on the Rambam, I don't do it.
Okay, fine. But I'm just saying.
I'll tell you why.
Go ahead.
And because the answer to your question shows why I don't do it. The themes of that Hallel universalizes further beyond. In other words, the second part of the Hallel universalizes within the framework of Yisrael, but namely the more general benefit relationship that the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives the Amo Yisrael. As part of that, the Yitzhak Mitzrayim was instrumental to. The Hallel Gadol goes beyond that, to the Shemayim Ushmei Hashemayim, to seeing Israel not seeing the good that Hashem gives us not in political national terms, but in scientific metaphysical terms. And if a person is moved to really be in that framework, so we should do it. But I view it as a little bit of yuhara to do it, you know, if one is not in that framework. And really what happens is when schlepping, and it's sort of a bizui, be schlepping through it, and one's exhausted from what one has done, and one schleps through one more, one davens through one more text. If one sees oneself that's going to daven through one more text, I would think it's better not to do it.
So
that answers the question, and it also answers why I don't do it. Namely, it is a potential excellence in the very Hallel from before, but it's a discrete Hallel phenomenon of seeing how the good that occurs to Israel, that Israel is itself a component part of Hashem's Bria, and it fits into the larger order of Hashem's Bria, and the order that is true of the Bria as a whole, as opposed to the microcosm of the political world. So that's a discrete phenomenon, and it's up to the individual person's choice whether his Hallel really is at that level or not. If it is, he's allowed to enhance his Hallel in that way. If he's not at that level, better he shouldn't do it.
I see. So there's Kiddush, there's Magid, there's Birchas HaMazon, and then there's Birchas HaShir. That's Dalet Kosos. That's if right. You want to do a fifth one, you could do a fifth one on Halal HaGadol if you're so inclined. And as,
if you
as
are, inspired. If you see yourself so inspired, you know, Misha,
why is it demand kos?
Because it's a component part of the Seder phenomena, which is a Seder phenomenon, which is a phenomenon of kososhal bracha. So it's related. It's an enhancement of the Dalet Kosos. So therefore, it can't be that you do but it's discreet. It's discreet from the fourth kos. So there's a fifth kos that enhances the state of the person normally created by the fourth kos. But so, it's only if in reality it's going to do that. I think that many people it wouldn't do that.
No, Hallel itself is a big burden. By the time ever
I know, it's a stretch to even make meaningful the Hallel. Halavai, we should do that.
After the meal, people are done.
They're done. So to make them do another meaningless activity, it'll take away.
That's of course. I mean, I understand. But I'm just. You're basically arguing that look, if a guy. This is a separate idea of the whole Agadol, different principle.
It interconnects and reframes one's previous halal in a mighty way. If you're that guy, the Rav should do it. The Rav probably all night long was singing, you know? He should.
Magid itself. Magid itself is.
I mean, one of the most striking things that I ever heard about the Rav was his daughter describing him after Yom Kippur. So most people have Yom Kippur like running to the refrigerator. So he couldn't eat. He's singing Nigunim of Yom Kippur for hours into the night. He could not stop and eat. He had to come down from his high, you know? Couldn't let go to eat. So, of course, he's like, he's going on, of course. And he's going to keep going on after that, too. But my cousin used to drive Rav Aaron Soloveitchik home after he taught at Rambam. So one time, this guy would sometimes come with him. So he was asking him a question. He says, Rebbe, I heard the Gra would not sleep 4 hours a night. Do you sleep 4 hours a night? So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, no, I sleep 8 hours a night. He says, why? Why don't you do what the Gra shows to do? So he looked at him and says, I'm not the Gra. So that's the same thing here. Yeah, the Rav should do it. I'm not the Rav, you know? Okay. So I'll leave it at that point.
But just back to the point, you're saying since it's a separate Chol Hashem of Hallel,
yep,
it's an addendum, has to be all that demands an Ala Kos.
That's right, to connect it back to the first one, be an Ala Kos, a Hallel Ala Kos phenomenon, right.
This, of course, punctures the, what people like say, there are four suns and there are four cups and there are four,
right.
And there are four of that.
Right, that's true also. There's as many as there are.
There used to be five questions. And you right. Can't have five cups.
Right. And properly thought of, the idea of the Kosher Eliyahu is actually correct in the sense that Eliyahu is the harbinger and prepares us. What is Eliyahu, what Rambam says? He'll come. Maybe he'll come. There will be a Navi who will come and prepare us before the Mashiach. Maybe it'll be Eliyahu. And he wasn't sure even if there was. But he wasn't even sure there was going to be a Navi, and he certainly wasn't sure it was Eliyahu, but maybe it would. But that's the idea. That's what people are thinking of. Namely, there'll be a Navi who'll become before the Yemos Mashiach to ready us, to prepare us, to educate us, to be able to undergo that mighty transformation. And that's exactly right. That's exactly what this Kos is about. It's about getting a glimmer of the transformed Judaism that'll exist when the conception of Hashem as the girl Yisrael in political reality will be synonymous with Hashem who moves the physical world and the metaphysical concepts of such a first cause. But, not necessarily am I that guy right now.
Just a quick question. You are allowed to drink if you want to during Maggid, correct?
Between the wine, I wouldn't drink wine necessarily, but other things.
Oh, I see. Okay. For some reason, I was under the impression that if you wanted to, you could drink between the first.
The Rambam says you could. The Rambam says you could, but there's some argument about that, so I wouldn't recommend it necessarily.
Right. Don't drink wine. You could drink soda.
Coffee.
Coffee's good.
Okay.
Right. Very good. That wakes you up. That's great.
You got to caffeine up.
A little caffeine it up.
Okay.
Okay, gentlemen, a pleasure as always, and I hope to see everybody at 7 o'clock when, God willing, we will start going into making the